very happy to welcome to our program John Quigley. He's professor of international and comparative law at Ohio State University. He's the author of The Statehood of Palestine, International Law in the Middle East Conflict, and The Case for Palestine, an International Law Perspective. Professor Quigley, thanks so much for joining us on the program tonight.
Thank you.
First of all, I wondered if you'd provide an overview for myself and the listeners of the Palestinian Authority's decision to seek and to win United Nations General Assembly recognition of Palestine as a non-member observer state. And I should just add that the vote, many of our listeners are aware, was quite overwhelming in the General Assembly. We had 138 nations voting in favor, 9 opposed, and 41 abstentions over the strong objections of both Israel and the United States. But if you could provide that overview, it'd be helpful.
Yes, this is actually the latest step in a very long process that's not yet completed, and won't be completed, I suppose, until Palestine is a member of the UN and actually has complete control over its territory. But from 1988, when the PLO declared that it was the government of the state of Palestine, there have been efforts to gain international acceptance of Palestine as a state. And to a large part, that has actually been accomplished, with now most states in the world recognizing of Palestine in the sense of diplomatic recognition, many of them establishing embassies for Palestine in their capital cities. But one of the efforts has been to become a member of international organizations, and that began in 1989 when the PLO attempted to gain membership in the World Health Organization and in UNESCO, the UN Economic, Social, and Cultural Organization. And in both instances, the United States threatened to defund organizations, those organizations, were they to admit Palestine as a member, which would have been as a member state. So those efforts were derailed. The World Health Organization was inclined to admit Palestine as early as that, 1989. But the United States made it clear that it would withdraw money that would, in effect, destroy the organization entirely. So the Director General of the World Health Organization made an impassioned speech to the assembly of the organization, saying, you know, please postpone the Palestine application, otherwise we'll go out of existence. So that that really hasn't been taken up again until quite recently. In 2011, the Palestine government announced that it would seek membership in the United Nations, and filed an application for membership that was directed by the Secretary General to the Security Council. And the Security Council, in effect, didn't deal with it, that is, didn't take a vote on it as a result of pressure from the United States against the other countries that were on the Security Council. So that didn't come to fruition. But around the same time, the Palestine government applied for membership in UNESCO again, and that was approved. So that's been just over a year now that Palestine has been a member state in UNESCO, and the UNESCO charter requires that an entity be a state. So this is the next step. There's another wrinkle here, and that is that the government of Palestine has been interested in according jurisdiction to the International Criminal Court for war crimes committed in the territory of Palestine, in particular in connection with the hostilities in Gaza from 2008, but more generally. And it filed with the International Criminal Court a declaration accepting the jurisdiction of the court over war crimes that may have been committed in the territory of Palestine. that's a process that's permitted under the statute of that court, that any state, a state that's not a member state, that is not a party to that statute, and Palestine is not, that any other state may file a declaration accepting the jurisdiction of the court, or in fact, you might say conferring jurisdiction on the court. And that was examined for about 2 years by the prosecutor of the court, who ultimately said he wasn't sure whether Palestine is a state, but that determination should be made not by him, but by the UN General Assembly. So that, in effect, invited the Palestine government to approach the General Assembly with this kind of resolution.
So that lays some good history there about how this all occurred. What are the benefits for the Palestinian Authority here now that they've won the recognition as a member observer, as a non-member observer state?
Well, that remains to be seen, actually. But on one side, you have the statement that was made by the United States ambassador following the vote on Thursday in the General Assembly, where she said that the resolution does not mean that Palestine is actually a state. So you have that point of view, which I think would be shared by Israel and maybe two other states in the world, that the resolution does not actually regard Palestine as a state. That is, of course, completely in contradiction to the text of it that refers to Palestine as a state. I'm not sure exactly what the UN ambassador meant by that, but it doesn't bode well for what approach the United States may take on these matters. However, for the government of Palestine, it involves a continuing, you might say, higher level of acceptance of it as a state, which is going to make it easier for Palestine to participate in international organizations in a variety of ways that will assist the people of Palestine. One, of course, the membership that has already occurred, as I mentioned, was in UNESCO. And in that organization last summer, an application Palestine made came to fruition for the designation of a World Heritage Site, which is a procedure they have in UNESCO to protect culturally important sites. And Palestine applied for the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem to be listed as a World Heritage Site. And last summer, the UNESCO did that. There are quite a few treaties that could be entered into by Palestine that might enhance its position in a rather practical way. One is the Law of the Sea Convention that deals with such things as control over ocean space for fishing, which of course has been an important bone of contention off the Gaza coast, and as well to undersea minerals, which could potentially be important in preserving Palestine's rights to the natural gas deposits that are off the shore of Gaza. There's also an international treaty on civil air transport that acknowledges a state's control over airspace and has procedures to protect that. And that, of course, is an issue because of the flights by Israeli aircraft over Palestine territory, including the drones like the ones that were over Gaza during the recent attack there. So there are a number of issues of that kind. But more generally, I think Palestine can operate more effectively at the international level, being considered a state. The next step, of course, would be to membership in the UN, which would enhance its position even farther.
But membership in the UN requires a vote, affirmative vote by the Security Council without a veto of one of those member states, right?
Well, that's what has widely been thought, I think, by most member states of the UN in recent years, at least. My own view is that is not the case. And that under the UN Charter, the General Assembly has the power to admit a state regardless of what the Security Council does, so long as the General Assembly makes a genuine effort to solicit wait for, let's say, a recommendation from the Security Council. This comes down to an interpretation of some rather ambiguous language in the UN Charter, Article 4, which says that the General Assembly admits new states to the organization upon the recommendation of the Security Council. And that language doesn't make it obvious as to whether upon the recommendation means that there has to be a positive recommendation and that that recommendation might be subject to veto on the one hand, or on the other, that the General Assembly must wait until there is a recommendation of the Security Council, or if the Security Council, let's say, has decided not to make a recommendation, but that at that point the General Assembly could admit.
We're speaking with John Quigley, Professor of International and Comparative Law at Ohio State University, and we're talking about the drive by the Palestinian Authority at the United Nations to win recognition as a non-member observer state, a status which they won last week. And Professor Quigley, the Israelis promised retaliation, and they did, after this vote, withhold $120 million in tax revenue from the Palestinian Authority, but maybe more importantly, they vowed to build 3,000 more housing units in contested areas of both East Jerusalem and the West Bank. And there's also plans afoot to develop land in a very controversial spot that would divide the West Bank in half. What can you tell us about the price that the Palestinians will be paying given this threat of Israeli retaliation here?
Well, it's unclear exactly how that threat will be carried out. Israel has come in for some very severe criticism in the last 24 hours over this. The European governments, interestingly, are getting into the act and calling in Israeli ambassadors in their capitals and making it clear that Europe is not prepared to put up with this. And Europe has quite a bit of leverage because of the trade relations between Israel and Europe, leverage that potentially could be used by Europe. But the threat to initiate this major new settlement development east of Jerusalem, you know, is potentially a very serious matter, and it would, as you say, in effect, make it impossible to get from the southern part of the West Bank to the northern part of the West Bank for Palestinians. I mean, it's already very difficult, but this would make it much more difficult. But it highlights again the importance of what Palestine may be able to do as a state, because once the International Criminal Court prosecutor decides that the court has jurisdiction over crimes committed in Palestine, one of the crimes that it could investigate would be the establishment of settlements. Under the statute of that court, there is a long list of acts that constitute war crimes, like, you know, bombing civilian houses and that sort of thing. And one of the items listed is the establishment of civilian settlements in territory under belligerent occupation. That is when a state comes into control of the territory of another state, any foreign territory, by military means. It's required to follow certain rules, and it's not supposed to take it over and not supposed to bring in its own people to live there. So that's a war crime. So it could well be that would be investigated by the International Criminal Court, potentially holding Israeli officials responsible for crime.
Professor Quigley, there are some observers who talk about this recognition by the General Assembly of the Palestinian Authority as a non-member observer state as setting back the possibility of restarting peace negotiations between Israel and Palestine. What are your thoughts about that? is there a possibility that the Palestinians have gained some leverage here that's not been quite recognized as yet?
I think that may well be the case. I mean, the Palestinians don't have very much leverage. The whole bilateral approach that was initiated by President Bush, H.W. Bush, in 1991 at a conference in Madrid, has really put the Palestinians in a bad posture, because of course they're negotiating in a situation where they have very little leverage, and that change of events was quite critical and detrimental. Previously, the idea had been that there should be some kind of international conference that would involve both parties, but that would oversee the talks between them and would ensure that the outcome was based on international law and principles. It was President Bush that pushed it into the bilateral mode, and that has simply been used by Israel to take over more and more territory and with no end in sight to the negotiations. So this does give the Palestinian side a bit more leverage.
On the issue of divisions among the Palestinian people, you have Hamas controlling the territory of Gaza, in as much as they do, given the Israeli security umbrella all around it. And you have this long-running conflict between Hamas and Fatah. And I'm wondering, do you see any positive results for Palestinian unity here as a result of this UN recognition?
Well, that's widely bruited about now, that it does potentially have that impact. That is, that once Palestine becomes accepted as a state, it will actually put some pressure on Hamas to kind of become part of that. It also puts pressure on Fatah, because one of the raps against Fatah, and this is an argument that's been used widely by Israel, is, you know, how can you consider it a state when it doesn't even have control, not to speak of the occupation by Israel, but even apart from that, doesn't have control over its territory. So I think it probably puts pressure on both the Palestinian parties.
Well, just a final question for you, Professor Quigley, and that has to do with there are Israeli elections coming up at the end of January. And it's widely believed that Benjamin Netanyahu will be victorious. And it's widely believed across the world that Israel won't bend in any future negotiations with the Palestinians off the hard line it's taken of recent years without United States pressure. And now that the U.S. election has passed, do you think the Obama administration has any possibility of applying pressure to Israel to be a fair broker for future peace negotiations that could succeed after so many decades of failure?
Well, that's a $64,000 question, I suppose. The history on this has not been good, that is, U.S. administrations haven't been inclined to divert. Both political parties think they have to be very solicitous of Israel in order to retain power in the United States, so that even in a second term, the Obama administration is going to be concerned about the next election and whatever Democrat runs. And there are, of course, elections for Congress again in 2 years. So that's the negative side. The positive side is that you did have President Obama at the beginning of his first term, seemingly opening up to the Arab world with his speech in Cairo in in 2009. And for a time, that raised the popularity of the United States quite dramatically in the region. So he has some sort of precedent, you might say, for having taken action that moves in the opposite direction.
So are you optimistic? Anything can happen here? Things are moving like they haven't moved in a while. Any sense of where things might be going?
Well, I think the Palestinians will continue to strengthen their position diplomatically. I think it is quite significant that Europe did not follow the United States in this vote in the General Assembly last Thursday. That is indeed one source of optimism that Europe will break from the United States.
Well, Professor Quigley, thanks so much for spending time with us and getting into some of the history and the legal issues involved here in the longstanding conflict between Israel and Palestine. And we appreciate all the work you do and the books and your writing. Where's a good place on the Internet for people to find some of that, Professor Quigley?
Well, I think Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the usual places.
Okay. Well, appreciate your time again, and thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Professor Quigley, Professor of International Comparative Law at Ohio State University. His books are, again, The Statehood of Palestine, International Law in the Middle East Conflict, and The Case for Palestine in International Law Perspective.